A while back, I went to get a life insurance policy the old-fashioned way. Physical exam, blood work, the whole thing. They turned me down. My numbers were bad. Now that rejection ended up being one of the best things that has happened to me. It kicked the health journey that I am still on. Down 30 pounds and counting. But I realize not everybody's in that situation. Maybe you've just been putting it off. Maybe the process always seemed like too much of a hassle. That's exactly what Ethos fixes. Ethos helps you find life insurance completely online, no medical exam, just a few simple health questions. Get a quote in seconds. Apply in minutes. Same day coverage up to $3 million in protection. And some policies are as low as 30 bucks a month. There's no excuse to keep waiting on this one. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Free quote at ethos.com/Zabe. ethos.com/Zabe. Application times may vary. Rates may vary. It's summertime, and at MyBookie, that can only mean one thing. It is winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. And at MyBookie, winning season's all about your chance to win big. Bet NBA playoffs, NHL, Major League Baseball, UFC, golf, and then some. The craziest sports summer we've ever had. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your sports intuition, people. Select from hundreds of futures bets. You can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big old brain of yours to good use and use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games that you bet. Thousands of cross-sport wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now and bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go! Here we go! It is the beach edition of the ZabeCast, a day late and a dollar short, but I got Andy Poland to make up for it. Andy, my friend, it's great to talk to you. I am very sorry that your gig at the sports capital in D.C. came to an end rudely last week, shortly after you and I had recorded our podcast. How you feeling almost a week later?
Well, you are at the beach and I am on the beach. So it works out pretty well. Look, this is the business. I was a line item for Cumulus. They eliminated it. There is now one person working at the sports capital. I guess you can make a sports station with one person. I wish them luck. They treated me well. I had hoped it would last 2 years. It lasted seven. So I got no complaints.
That is fantastic, by the way. And it is also a sad commentary, isn't it, on the state of the industry? Mm-hmm. Like, what are they even doing with a sports station with one live body? It's our friend Mike Callow.
Yeah.
And Callow's a great guy. And, you know, he's doing the best he can. But it's like, whoa, what are you doing as the third fiddle sports station in the D.C. market?
Yeah. Well, the issue was this. I mean, 630 was the heritage station. It's what you grew up with. They carried the Redskins. They carried Maryland sports. You had Hardin and Weaver.
630 a.m. That's the signal.
Right. And 20 years ago, they added an FM. And when they started the sports capital in 2019, they recognized that their listenership on the AM from their talk format on WMAL was next to nothing. So they put sports on it. And they hired four of us with a part-timer. And over the years, it got whittled down to two. And last week, it got whittled down to one. And, you know, AM stations across the country, they're just turning off the power. I don't know what Cumulus plans to do with this one. They have ESPN programming. They have the Oriole games. They have Virginia sports. Maybe they just continue the way they're doing. And this is no reflection on Mike Callow, but he was the assistant, maybe still, no, he can't be the assistant program director anymore. He's supposed to be the program
he's
director.
He's the president of programming. He is the president of snacks. Yeah. He is the president of operations. He's the president of everything because he's the last guy.
So he's got to tell the traffic department, you've got to schedule the Oriole games in with the commercials. I didn't do that, so I guess it was easier to get rid of me.
Yeah, it's very sad. So here's a question for you, Andy, lifetime grizzled radio guy. Why is AM radio dying? AM stands for amplitude modulated, and it is a style of radio or technology of radio that delivers the sound in a clear and strong way when the signal is good and powerful, but it's not rich in terms of its fidelity. It's not stereo. It's not, you know, robust. It's more basic. Why do you think AM is dying?
Because as FM moved to what you described and became more common in the cars, I mean, I had a, growing up, my mother had a 1975 Dodge Dart. It only had AM radio in it. And now that cars have it, formats move over. There are people who are in their 40s, maybe 50s, who've never listened to AM radio. And the last bastion of hope for that was the talk format, like we had on 980 AM. And, you know, even like the news stations, WTOP had a great AM signal for all news. They moved that to FM 20 years ago, and I don't think they have, well, of course, not even simulcast on 1500 anymore. So,
So according to Grok, AM is narrower bandwidth, limited audio fidelity, roughly telephone quality, highly susceptible to electrical noise, static, lightning, and interference, almost always mono. Almost. Sometimes it's stereo, but it's just such a poor way to deliver sound. There's no point in making it stereo. FM, wider bandwidth, much better frequency response and dynamic range, excellent noise rejection, and the stereo is standard. It supports much better music reproduction. So it is crazy it lasted this long, but you're right. AM 630 was the station of my youth. As it was yours in the DC market, growing up in the 70s and hearing my dad listen to Hardin and Weaver, the two iconic morning show hosts on WMAL.
That's
6:30 a.m. And my dad would go off into his car in the driveway on the mean streets of McLean to drive to the Department of fucking Agriculture downtown to do Lord knows what with their computer systems back in 1972.
Well, look, the godfather of our business, Ken Beatrice. That was sports talk radio. Evenings. WMAL 432, whatever the number was. Give me a call. And that was it. And in fact, I know someone who was... He was in insurance sales, meaning he was in his car all day. And he used to tape the Ken Beatrice show at night and play it on cassette in his car during the day because that's all that was available.
Christ. Taping Ken Beatrice on cassette at night.
Yeah.
He probably turned a speaker on and hit record on the built-in microphone in the cassette recorder, which was about the size of a loaf of bread. A Buick. It was like the earliest ones I saw were about yay big.
Right.
Damn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come a long way from there. Well, look. It's probably it for you. You've resigned yourself to it being probably it, but you're okay with it, right?
Yeah. Look, there may be some opportunities. I don't know. But this is the first time. This is the fifth time I've been fired, laid off, whatever you want to call it. And the first time that I go, yeah, if something comes along, great. If it doesn't, it's okay too.
Yeah. Well, you're 68. You plan to live to 100.
Yeah. I'll find something to do.
I hope you do. You like to bicycle. You tried golf, gave that up. You don't really drink. You don't really like going to concerts.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really big on volunteer work. You don't have a dog.
No. Let's be fair. No, I am available for volunteer.
You're available. You're not big on it.
I do it.
I know you do it, Andy. You're a mensch, but I'm just saying you're not down at the soup kitchen every Tuesday.
No, but if the soup kitchen would like to have me, I'm available now for sure.
Andy doesn't fish either. Doesn't hunt. Like, we need to get you some hobbies. That's my number one goal right now, hobbies.
We're doing this in the middle of the afternoon. I spent the morning vacuuming, cleaning up. I got a haircut. I went to the bank. I went to the pharmacy. I've had a busy day.
It's been a good Tuesday, but Wednesday's looking wide open, and Thursday and Friday, oh, shit, we're super wide open. Because, you know, you're going to be with a freshly vacuumed house. You're not going to need to vacuum it again for a week.
I know. That's
No lawn to deal with, no grass to cut, no mulch to spread. You already spread your two bags of it.
Books.
That's good. That's good. It's a good life. Well, look, all kidding aside, I need to tell you thank you for your role in my career. You are the single most influential and the biggest benefactor to all of my success on multiple levels at multiple junctures. From the time you hired me off my mom's couch to do updates on what was then 570 AM.
Correct.
And then again, when you welcomed me in to be part of the sports reporters back around 2000, when you did not have to do that. I was young, brash, an asshole, kind of. I had some decent qualities, but I would have been easily rejected or sabotaged by a more insecure person in the business. And that was thankfully not you, because you saw something in me and understood that I could help the show. And for that, I am forever grateful. And I consider you a friend and a mentor and a bit of an older brother, and sort of like, you know, the Jewish brother I never had. Still would like to go through the program to become one of the tribe, but you tell me you're not recruiting and it's an arduous process.
You have to earn it, and I don't think you want to go through the process. But I would say this, and thank you for the nice words. I remember pre-cell phones talking to your mom about the possibility of you doing update shifts, and she said, "Steven is at the golf range." And I said, "Well, tell him to call me when he gets home." So that led to a
couple of people back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know, when I arrived to start the station and I helped start the station in 1992, I got a garbage bag full of tapes. And I was at the point already where I could listen to 15 seconds and know, okay, this person might be a possibility. This person has no shot. And I listened to your tape and I thought it was good. And you had experience at that point. And I think you were in Santa Barbara, right?
Yeah. Doing gauchos and some other stuff. Basketball and doing morning radio. So
yeah, I knew you'd be good at it. And the uptight program director at the time didn't like the fact that you were putting between updates, but we got through that.
That'd be Bond.
Rich Bond. Yeah.
I thank Rich Bond. Rich Bond hired me two places, both at 980. And then when he went to Chicago to start One-on-One Sports, he brought me over and saw him. You know, and he was very uptight. He was great at writing memos. Holy shit.
No, he knew the corporate game. But the part about the sports reporters, you saved the show. I mean, the problem with it prior to you being there is the idea I had was it was two rotating guests. The first show we ever did, I had Wilbon and Buck Hantz in the studio. That's can't do great, much better than that.
Kids
can't
all
get those guys
there
every day.
No, yeah. You're right.
Yeah. So you were good, and the styles make fights. And because we're different, because you're a little younger, because you grew up in Virginia, because I grew up in D.C., and because you are, in fact, a pain in the ass, it worked.
You're right.
And I was good at keeping the train on the tracks, and you were the one that was always trying to push it off. And it worked very well until somebody decided, oh, yeah, Chris Cooley needs a spot. He needs to go in the afternoon. And that was the end of that.
No, that's a great point, Andy. Great line as well that styles make fights. And it was really forward thinking of you to understand that, hey, I'm not worried about him stealing any spotlight. He's going to make the band better. I would say it's not, I don't want to compare myself to a rock legend, but it's like when the Eagles added Joe Walsh. The Eagles were already a big, well-known band, but they were more mellowish rock, and Joe Walsh brought an edge to them. Joe Walsh put them in a whole different direction, and it was that vision to go, hey, this guy can actually add a new element. But I tell you, the years that we did the show were the most fun. Never a dull day. It was never a slog because of that nature of rotating third person. And you never quite knew how the chips were going to fall on any given issue. Most of the time, the big brouhahas were two-on-one cage matches, WWE style. I was usually the one getting thrown through the tables by both of you guys, but I also accepted that, and I didn't bristle at that. Whereas some hosts we know, Andy, would go to the program director going, "Did you hear the show today? Like they were calling me names. They weren't letting me get my points across." Right? Did I ever do that?
No.
I got thrown through tables. I got up and I'm like, "Is that all you got, Levero?"
Well, early on, I mean, the tone was set by Chris Nocke when you rolled out the 4-point shot, and Nocke, a basketball lifer, played college basketball, coached college basketball, has broadcast college basketball for a total of like 50 years or more. He shot you down and we were off and running because that really was the tone setter for the whole show.
Yes. But what was great also was that there was the punches and the elbows thrown on the show were absolute sharp and they were haymakers. It was guys being guys. It was, "I'm not here to worry about your feelings. I'm here to get over with the audience." And so I think listeners were like, "Oh man, did you hear that? Like, you know, Nocke just body bagged Zabin," or Zabe just asked Christine Brennan, columnist for USA Today, in exasperation, asked her, "What is it that you people want?"
My God.
And then a chilled silence fell over the studio.
That was sort of the end of her appearances. But
that was sort of the end of it. But, you know, that was every day. And that's what made it so fun. That's why it made it so genuine as well. And it included an absolute rotating amount of very good, smart sports media people from across the spectrum, many of whom have gone on to big name famous things, and they all came through at some point, which is freaking amazing, Andy.
Yeah, it was good. We had the money to do it too. I mean, the show.
What did we pay the guests? $200 a show?
Yeah. So that's another $1,000 a week thrown onto what we were making. And I don't know what you made, but I was doing pretty well at the time. And
1,000 a week.
Put two kids through college.
1,000 a week is $48,000 a year. To me, a $48,000 a year position for a third host shouldn't be that much. Now we're talking $2,001. So that's, you got to account for that. But, you know, it was a world in which the internet existed, but social media didn't, and YouTube didn't, and Twitter didn't. So this was the main place to go get sports commentary about the teams you care about. Right. And so therefore there was economics to support it. But what washed over me as I was thinking about this, and I happened upon this just by random as I was waiting to leave for the beach, was a 30 for 30 on the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys. And my first thought was, I genuinely weep for anyone who is not old enough to remember the NBA in the 80s, because it was so fucking good.
It was good.
The characters. Like, it was absolute Batman villainry. This good guy, bad guy. I mean, you know, Chuck Daly as a figure on the sideline. These oddball players like Rodman or Vinnie Johnson. Like, you'd explain Vinnie Johnson to today's NBA fan who hasn't, no clue. Well, what'd he do? Well, he was built like a fucking fire hydrant. Like, comically built, right? Like, short, muscled, huge head. And you wouldn't think much of him, but the motherfucker made baskets. And he would get hot. And that's why his nickname was the Microwave. He was a six man they put in. It's like, "Oh, shit, Vinnie Johnson's in. Better guard him."
I saw him in the locker room when he was with Seattle, when they played in Dallas, when I worked there, standing next to a friend of mine. Let's just use the term tripod, if we might.
I mean, not that you were looking at other men's junk, but let's be honest. Yeah.
No, but
couldn't help but not. You'd be like, "Whoa, what the hell?"
Right. This was like a Mark McGwire home run. I mean, it was, whoa.
But wow, that first thought was, I feel bad for anyone that doesn't have those memories of the 80s to rely on. Now, second thing that hit me was, you know whose commentary is all over that 30 for 30? Brian Burwell.
Oh, right. That's
Brian
right.
Burwell, rest in peace. He died young. I believe 59. Heart issues at 59.
No, he died of prostate cancer. And that's another thing. colon cancer, which means when you're, I think it's even younger now, they want you to get your first colonoscopy in your 40s.
Yeah. Brian Burwell wrote for the USA Today. He also wrote for the Detroit Free Press back in the day.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But Brian, just seeing his face and his smile and his tone, Brian was one of many wonderful guests. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Come on with us. Yep. He knew how to bring it. He was super knowledgeable. He never had clown takes just for the sake of a take. And here's what's also wonderful, Andy, is that, you know, we came from a different background than Brian. Brian was authentically Black, but he would talk to us as if we're all in the same barbershop together. There was never any sort of a tension of, well, you guys from Bethesda and from McLean wouldn't know. He was, and he respected us and we respected him. We had great conversations. And then I was like, fuck, not just Brian Burwell, rest in peace, but Ralph Wiley.
Yep.
Ralph Wiley, for those that don't know, you should Google him and look up his stuff. He passed away. What age did he die at?
He died at 51, not that long after I asked him to come in. I didn't know him, but he came in. It was must have been for Tony's show because he knew Tony from the sports reporters. And he was one of those high level, you know, type of columnists at the time.
Where did he write?
He wrote for, God, who did he write for?
He was hired by ESPN in page two, I think, before he died.
Later, I mean, he would have become a much smarter Stephen A. Smith if he'd been given the opportunity.
Ralph Wiley is the absolute deluxe thinking man's version of both Stephen A. and Bomani Jones. But you stack both those guys on top of each other, they still don't equal the intellect of Ralph Wiley. And Ralph Wiley was also authentically Black, but also was more than happy to sit down with us, two white kids from the D.C. burbs, to talk sports and have mutual respect and make each other laugh and everything else. I'll never forget when Ralph Wiley was talking about the late Kobe Bryant and this house he had bought for Vanessa in Orange County, which was like the size of Disneyland. And he was like very dismissive going, oh, that whole Disneyland park he bought her, man, shit. And I was like, okay, that's good. Here's Ralph Wiley sort of throwing shade at Kobe Bryant on the air, which was something you didn't hear much of.
Oh, no. Actually, that was in reference to a story where he was feuding with his father, Jellybean.
Right.
And he broke down the whole thing about, oh, he lives in Orange County and dad lives in L.A. and they just can't see eye to eye where they live. I mean, it's a culture that we don't really understand, but he explained it so well. Yeah, that was an awful thing when he passed away. Oh, it was so horrible. Awful.
Yeah, but he was a great addition. And of course, Buck Hantz and Lavero and Naki, the three big horsemen that were some of the most repeat guys on that rotation. A lot of our, you know, otherwise dry print guys who had become part of the crew, like Larry Weissman, really found their legs with us on a rotating basis where they were very funny, very insightful, which was great. It was just never, you know, and then we had later on, we would have, you know, some women that were in the orbit, including Sage Steele was a regular. Yep. Carol Maloney was a regular. It just was so good, the variety. And here's what kills me, Andy. You could do this today if you wanted to.
You could.
A station could do it.
Nobody wants to do it.
I want to push back on that. Huh? It's not as expensive as it needs to be. You could even have a $200 stipend for a third wheel. You really could. You need two good hosts where styles make the fight, as you say. Bring that third rotating person who's television, print, radio, whatever, into the mix, and you put that on radio, it should be a winner. Great.
It should, but nobody's going to stick their neck out to do it. And the thing that made us unique is the differences between the two of us, which allowed the third person to jump on either side. A lot of hosts are the same now.
Right.
They don't argue in the way that we did. You know, it's just different. And we had the right mix with those people who could, you know, supplement. The other thing is they had boots on the ground. We were finding stuff out off the air that we never would have gotten, you know, sitting in a studio. You know?
Right.
So they've been in the locker rooms. They had the access. You know, guys like Paul White, who is a baseball guy with USA Today.
Paul White, yes.
He had lots and lots of insight. We would own those takes because, you know, we had a great
authority because Paul White would be in the locker room going, yeah, you know, so-and-so, you know, Davey Johnson doesn't want to hit this guy fourth. He told me so off the air.
Yeah, and we sounded like we knew something. We were just getting the stuff from them.
Well, and of course, the way it was with us in the studio every day from 4 to 7, although at one point it was 4 to 6, as I recall. It was a two-hour show.
I think we liked 5 to 7 because somebody told, I think Bennett Zier told John Thompson 4 to 5 was the most important hour. So he took that and we couldn't have it. And then eventually we got it. But yeah.
But we're in the studio every day. And so we're not out at the park. We're not at the stadium. But we're offering some of the most pointed commentary on whatever it is that's happening. And I would liken it to... And of course, this rubs some people the wrong way, like Jansen, the left tackle for the Commanders. Redskins, who didn't like me ripping on Brunel, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you had done that. You had done that John Jansen on TV.
Well, I'll get to that in a second. So John Jansen made sure to let our beat guy know. Hey, you tell this Zabin guy if he wants to come out here and say that to our face, you know. It was sort of like, hey, you chicken shit, you're not out here sticking a mic in our face. And my response was, that's not our job. Andy and I are in the duck boat with the shotguns. It's the other guys, the beat guys, who are out there as the Labradors in the water flushing the birds out, right? And then you and I, right? The
good,
birds
good
would
analogy,
come up. We'd
yeah.
be like, blah, 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 blah. We'd fucking unload on them. And that was the ecosystem that worked.
Yeah. Jansen, by the way, do you know what he's doing these days?
Hunting, duck hunting, probably. He's from Michigan.
Sports radio.
Oh,
in Detroit.
Is he? Oh, that is rich.
Yeah.
Funny how that is. Mm. But yeah, so, you know, there is that. So I want to segue off of that wonderful nostalgia. And I don't want to go any further because it'll just make my heart hurt even more that it's not being done anymore and it's over. But we still got it to remember. I wish we had more content. I wish I'd set up a camera, you know, to get some video of this, but whatever. We got the tape somewhere. Somebody's got a few tapes somewhere.
Well, that's good recollections. I'm glad you dredged that stuff up. That
I was going to say, did I spur some things that you had forgotten about?
No, I mean, I remember those things, but also when I posted on Facebook about this, and we got a lot of, I was in the car when I heard this. And one guy said he still laughs with his brother about Steve Spurrier saying, hello, Steve and Andy.
Yes, just the little things that stick with you sometimes are the funniest. And and of course, you know, we pissed off a lot of people. I pissed off, you know, Brunel Gibbs. On the TV show. Gibbs got super pissed at us. Yep. Zorn got hot pissed at us because we dared to ask, why does it matter if guys make the Pro Bowl? Team had just taken a 6-2 start and turned it into an absolute collapse, right?
Yep.
Spurrier got exhausted with us.
No, he didn't. He actually, Spurrier was great. He didn't care.
He didn't care, but he was at one point exasperated by us. Agree?
Yeah. Yeah, but he didn't. He never. The other two said they're not doing it with us anymore. So we did 1 year of Gibbs and we did 1 year of Zorn.
That's right.
But Spurrier came back for both years. He didn't care.
That is true. But you know, here's the thing. That was our job. I looked at our job as being accountable to the listeners and the fans first and always. And that meant being as truthful and direct as we could be. And if the coaches didn't like that directness, then all right, see you later. Go find another show. And so it invented the Inside the Red Zone show when Danny Boy bought the radio station and put his stooge Vinny on every day for an hour from noon to one.
No. The deal was Vinny wanted to do 5 days a week in the morning, either before Tony's show started or something like that. It was like 9 to 10, and he wanted to do it 5 days a week. He wound up doing it 2, but Bruce Gilbert, who had been our boss, used to have rule of thumb. He'd say 1 hour of prep for every hour you're on the air, and you should always actually be doing your talk show, you know, thinking about things that you want to talk about. So I said, okay, Vinny wants to do 5 days a week. That's 5 hours on the air and 5 hours of prep. Does he have 10 hours to take away from the team? If he does, they damn well better win the Super Bowl. And boy, that got everybody all hot and bothered. And Bruce defended us. So I like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. It actually started out taking calls as the team was going to 6-2. And as the season began to disintegrate and the callers were ripping the crap out of Vinny, no more calls.
Yes. What a fucking, the shit show that was the Snyder years. That's our book. You and I need to write that book.
Oh, yeah. We chronicled that. We did.
Oh, yeah. Front row seat. And in retrospect, with every year that passes, all the shit that actually did happen seems less and less plausible all the time. Because it was just an abundance of horrible ideas and executed poorly. So there was that.
Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good. Maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at MyBookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
All right, so I want to pivot to the aftermath of the Jaden Daniels story. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you and I talked about it Monday, did we?
No, about the number five and LSU. No, we have not talked about this.
This has been shockingly a bigger flashpoint than I had ever thought it would be. And it's become an internet meme where every social media account is piling on to the very cheap laugh about we stopped at four out of deference to Jaden Daniels, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to mop up. Okay, so a couple of things I was not as accurate on as I could have been or should have been when I talked about it last, which is the kid who's wearing five was on the team last year and he wore a three. But since Kelly is gone and there's a new sheriff in town and he don't give a fuck, he gave the jersey away. The letter from Daniel's attorneys or people was sent 10 days prior to when it got leaked. Not sure who leaked it, probably LSU because Lane Kiffin doesn't give a fuck. But it was from his attorney, and it was essentially a, hey, fuck you letter, because it said cease and desist from your nil marketing of Jaden Daniels. And I'm not even sure that was even still going on or applicable, but it was their way of saying, fuck you. You gave out his jersey when the last guy said he wouldn't. Okay. So that's the shape of it. And I never said and didn't imply that Jaden Daniels was spending any significant amount of time thinking about this issue right now. Didn't say that. Don't imply that. But it was an unforced PR error. And the reason that I tweeted out, hey, worry about keeping your career out of the ditch and not things in the past, is because the last two guys we had, Andy, they either didn't see the most important thing in front of them or they never saw it or never got it. RG3, I think, at least saw it for a minute and then went crazy and lost sight of it. And his reign was very short because of it. And then poor Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace. I don't think he ever saw the point of it. So I love Jaden Daniels. I think he's a tremendous talent. I still have concerns about him staying healthy, but that jersey, Andy, that's in the past. That is past stuff. And don't lean on, but it's business and he's got his people and they make money. Fuck that. You're making money now in the NFL. Your run in this league will be over quicker than you can believe if you aren't focused entirely on it. That stuff back there, that's backwards looking shit, Andy.
Not only that, that means, just like I was talking about Vinny Serrato and spending 10 hours a week on radio, that comes back to bite you if you struggle. Oh, yeah. Well, correct. If he had paid more attention to what was going on in the offseason instead of who was getting his jersey at LSU, then he wouldn't have been that bad. Wouldn't have thrown three interceptions in that game. Yeah. Those things come back to bite you.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, people took there's a small but vocal group of Commander fans who are super sensitive and are very aggressive online. It's a weird bunch, I got to be honest. But they treat any kind of criticism, no matter how valid, as how dare you attack. You're just trying to tear him down. Why is there a smear campaign against Jaden Daniels? Not everything is a smear campaign. Sometimes it's just criticism. Like, you know, this is fucking stupid. Don't worry about this stuff. But, you know, one guy did say to me, he's like, well, career in a ditch, you'd know about that. You're doing weekends and you're a fill-in guy. And part of me was like, well, that kind of hurt because he's kind of got a point. But then again, wow. He's probably younger than when I started doing this with you and doesn't even know what my career is in total. But whatever. Okay, fine. Take your shots. That's fine. Let's get back to the issue at hand. His career is in a ditch, but it's not totaled. And it's not like he can't get out. It's an easy get out if things go right. But last year, his numbers slumped, and you can blame McLaurin and his contract holdout and his injury for half the year as part of it, or the rest of the roster. Okay. But his numbers were definitely declined from year one, and he got hurt. He got hurt trying to stiff arm a linebacker down 28 points in a game with 7 minutes to go. And then after weeks and weeks of nursing and teasing, and this is his non-throwing elbow, mind you, they bring him back, and he hurts it again after throwing a pick, trying to make a tackle. What it says to me is he still doesn't fully know how this game is played up in the NFL, up here, as Gibbs would say.
Right.
You are a slight-frame burner who is a beautiful thrower, accurate, throws in anticipation, powerful arm. You're not to be stiff-arming dudes. You need to evolve your game because you'll fucking break. And when you're broken, you're done. Ask RG3.
Yeah, I think that's the reason Cliff Kingsbury is not the offensive coordinator anymore.
Really?
That the hurry-up offense and just the things that they were doing. And this is a more conventional offense with a young guy and David Blau. We don't know how well it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything they're doing, I'm sure, is designed to keep him healthy. But then again, this is the NFL. Look, Marcus Mariota playing in an exhibition game on Friday night. First play, not hit.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you employ a fossil as your only backup.
He's not a fossil. He's 31, 32. He's not that old.
Okay, he's not Josh Johnson old. Let's put it that way. By the way, do you know, this is funny, I looked this up. So I was just looking at who started their starting quarterbacks. The Bengals started Joe Burrow. He threw 6 passes, completed 5, which was interesting they did that. But they also played 40-year-old Josh Johnson and 41-year-old Joe Flacco. I would argue if you add up Burrow's age plus Josh Johnson and Joe Flacco, it is the single highest numerical age of any single team in NFL history. Wow. You're over 100 years of quarterback age in one game. I know it's a preseason game where you play a bunch of guys, but think about that. Burrow plus a 40-year-old and a 41-year-old.
Yeah, well, you know, there was a time, and they played 6 exhibition games. It wasn't unusual to see the starting quarterback go the whole way. They didn't do the load management the way they do it now. And
it's just so, you know, dumb.
Sonny Jurgensen, when 1971, so that was, what, 3 or 4 years before he's mid-30s, and he's playing in an exhibition game against the Dolphins, and he throws a pick, and Sonny Jurgensen tried to make a tackle, broke his throwing shoulder, missed most of the year. It's the instincts of the game, partly, and the other part of it is the game itself, how brutal it is.
Yeah, but I got a nice email. I want to just shout this guy out because he's a subscriber, Yasin J., who says he didn't like my commentary on Daniels last Friday with Scott and Solly. Yasin, my man, I love you. I want Daniels to be as awesome as he looked his first year. But Andy and I have been here a while. We've seen these things go the wrong way on guys. It's a brutally tough league. You got to keep your eye on what matters at all times. I don't mind the mom thing. There's a lot of people that are like kind of weirded out by Jaden Daniels' mom being a stage mom.
No.
I'm fine with
it. She's smart. She's a smart woman.
She's smart. I'm fine with it. I do think at some point he probably should, you know, get onto his own legs and proceed with life. But whatever. That's not the problem. The problem is stay healthy, evolve off of what you were at LSU, And don't worry about shit over your shoulder. It's in the past. You made money. They made money. You know, if they're going to give your number out, just kind of shrug and go, okay, whatever. And if you privately want to tell them no, if they go, hey, you know, it looks like you have a week off and we're going to have a big alumni return down here, that's when you tell them to fuck off over the phone. You don't have attorneys write something, because I think it was LSU that leaked it to make them look bad. They're like, oh, you want to say fuck you to us? Watch this. There it is.
And we don't know if the attorney, well, you probably check with him, but I don't, you know, I think the attorney was off and running, like, you know, maybe he didn't think it through the way he should have.
Well, true. And maybe the attorney got a quick trigger on it, but it all comes back to who at the end? The quarterback. These quarterbacks are corporations unto themselves at the NFL level. The good ones that are going to be the next stars of the league. And I think Daniels, after year one, was like, holy shit, this guy is one of the next stars of the league. So it's a high wire act, and you got to be steady on it. But I want them to be fucking good. The notion, by the way, from some Commander fans that anyone in the media would be actively rooting against a player is fucking crazy. They have no idea how the business works. Like, no. You want the team to be good, the players to be awesome. You're not trying to tear anybody down, for God's sakes, because if the team was ever awesome, which they'd never been in 30-plus years, then the money would fall from the sky. And you'd have to get your hat out to collect it all. So that's what anyone in the media really want.
The best sports radio ratings were achieved in Boston during the run of the Patriots and the Celtics, and the Red Sox won a couple in there too. So people like winning. They like to hear about winning.
Yes. And when it's bad, sometimes people think, oh, this must be great for you guys. It's a terrible season. And you and I would always tell people, like, it's okay. Like, the minority that's still in you know, connected with how do we get this thing turned around, they're louder and they listen more, but it's a smaller room.
Yeah.
It's a smaller room, because there's a lot of casuals who are like, fuck it, I'm out.
Right? Yeah, right. I got one comment from a Giant fan who said he loved what we did because he's a Giant fan. You know, he loved us ripping the Redskins because that's unusual. Yeah. You're right. It's about winning.
Also, you know, for anyone that wants to make this a race thing, listen, people, I took a fucking bullet to get Brunel out of the starter's chair. All right. I went on Comcast and asked him directly, do you ever think it's time to tell coach maybe let Jason Campbell play? And it was deemed as so offensive, they suspended me for 2 weeks for even asking the question. Okay. Yeah. That's a fucking white guy right there that I was sick of seeing with his injured rotator cuff noodle ass arm lose game after game. You and I clowned on Rob Johnson, white guy, because he didn't fucking know the playbook and he sucked. You and I also were like, Patrick Ramsey, my godson. Do you not see anyone blitzing you ever? How do you not see that coming? Right?
Yeah. Well, look, the best quarterbacks in the league right now, for the most part, are black. Patrick Mahomes, in Baltimore.
Lamar Johnson, Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson,
yeah.
There's a good mix of them, obviously. But it's we're well beyond the white-black thing. So, anyway, real quick, any thoughts on Pat McAfee's music album that came out?
Except I heard it's terrible. I haven't heard it at all. Yeah. But there are some people, surprisingly not named Mike Greenberg, who think it's great. That apparently curries favor at the four letters if they like the Pat McAfee album.
I know.
But I have not heard it's bad.
I mean, here's fine for him for doing it. By the way, do you know how many athletes have put out albums? A ton.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is not unusual at all.
Joe Frazier had a rock group that he toured with in Vegas. Yeah, that goes back to
Terry
Bradshaw used to sing.
Had several country and gospel albums in the 70s.
Yeah.
John Daly, golfer, had an album. So it's fine. You know, be creative. What I think is crazy is how the McAfee sort of brand is a bunch of guys being guys together, loving sports, being bros, right? What should bros do when something like this happens? They should be busting McAfee's balls, saying, bro, this is trash. Come on, man. Don't release. Delete this. Like, I love you, man, but this thing, what is this? This is just auto-tuned AI mess. That would be the funnier thing. That'd be the more authentic thing, right? Instead, the ass-kissing has been unbelievable, by the way. Well, it's been one guy after another. And to see Orlovsky say, you know what? I listened. This thing is legit good. Good.
Fuck, man.
Well, come on.
The guys are in the studio. Who asks one question over the course of an hour. That his interviews are very awkward in that way. And then he's got his buddy who's on Zoom somewhere because the show's done in Indianapolis. He doesn't want to live there. AJ Hawk. Yeah. I mean, what he could do that show with two people, but he needs
what I call the show of force, which is the bro of force. He needs the bro posse. And I like the guys he has, but you're right. I often shake my head going, what does guy number five do behind the glass?
Or again, you know, an interview done well, and I think Dan Patrick's the best at doing this.
He's good.
Is a one-on-one conversation. Mm-hmm. And so when McAfee is asked a few things, which he could continue to ask questions, it'd be great, but feels like he has to involve his crew, that's when the interview breaks down. You know, oh, Joe has a question over here. What is this?
Right. Why am I sharing the stage with you? Because every question, like you have, if in a good interview, you've got four or five things most that you really want to get your subject onto. And you have to leave some room for some follow-ups if they stumble into something even more interesting on the four or five things, right?
Right.
So you really shouldn't have the luxury to let somebody else just take the interview in a whole different direction.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the listening is the number one thing in an interview. Number one, you ask questions, but you listen to the answer. And if you hear something that needs a follow-up, you ask the follow-up. It could take over the whole interview. It's okay. That's the job. But just to have questions from people to have questions from people doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Also, I'm assuming that they're not going to take McAfee's show to Boulder this year to suck Dion's dick like they did 2 years ago when he was all the rage. Have you been keeping abreast of what's happening there?
Well, I heard that Dion had a practice where he told everybody they had to leave their phones and even their pen and pencil behind.
Why? Because Dion just got served to be a witness in the trial of Shiloh. And the security guard he beat to a pulp when he was in high school and is being sued for $11 million. His son Shiloh is declaring Chapter 7 bankruptcy to try to not have to pay out. And yeah, Dion's going to. And they said that the theory is they didn't want Dion getting served at practice because then reporters would see it, possibly film it and or report on it. And so that was one of their defensive moves.
Yeah. Do you know how Shiloh got that judgment? He didn't show up. They went to court and they ruled in favor because they said that, if you're not there, you're not there.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, Andy, wonderful run today. I'm going to route this audio correctly through the right channel so you can hear it. You can see what I'm about to play for you.
Terry Bradshaw as a singer. You're kidding me.
Hear that?
Yeah. I see his toupee, too, on the album.
No, I think that's his real hair, but it's thinning. He had hair. It was thinning.
He had some hair when he came in.
You can see the widow's
peaks
here.
I met him once. He seems like a very nice guy. Seems like it.
He's become bitter and old and just kind of crazy. But then again, that's what I'm heading towards at a rapid rate. This is Terry Bradshaw's debut song, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. Is whining, I'm so lonesome I could cry. All right. That is not going to be Andy Pollin. He's going to be just fine. Kudos to you, my man. Legendary career. Whatever you decide to do next, if that includes not much, that's also great. I appreciate you coming on with me every week. And hopefully me, you, and Gene Wong will do a weekly at the Palm. We're trying to set that up for football season. That'd be good.
That'd be great. I don't think I'll be like Richie Pettibone, who said, I don't do anything and I don't get started until noon. I think my day will be more full.
I heard the line, which was told to me by Buck Hance, was, I ain't got nowhere to be and I don't have to be there until noon. It's a good life. All right, Andy, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Dave. Take care. Yeah.
It's summertime, and at MyBookie, that can only mean one thing. It is winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. And at MyBookie, winning season's all about your chance to win big. Bet NBA playoffs, NHL, Major League Baseball, UFC, golf, and then some. The craziest sports summer we've ever had. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your sports intuition, people. Select from hundreds of futures bets. You can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big old brain of yours to good use and use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games that you bet. Thousands of cross-sport wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now and bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie.